This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is brought to you by Yo Radio, the first music and radio platform with stations curated and managed by artists and influencers from across the globe. From Drake Bell to Megadeth's David Ellefson to UFC star Uriah Hall, just to name a few. Welcome to Yo Radio. Yo Radio delivers the best listener experience and is completely free. From hip-hop to rock to blues to EDM, Yo Radio has the music you want at your fingertips. Download the app now in the App Store for Apple devices and in the Google Play Store for Android. Or just go to YoRadio.com. That's YoRadio.com.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
We are back from Cuba and Peru, the International Sports Group. We had a great, great time with all the coaches in Cuba and Peru. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We're glad you can join us on today's episode. We feel it's another outstanding one. And because last week we brought to you by right in Havana, Cuba at the Nacional Hotel, we had Eddie Diaz, a tremendous story of perseverance, determination, coming from the Dominican Republic with $100 and then making it to managing in the Mexican League, three championships in a row, along with a Caribbean, two Caribbean World Series, all in one, all five championships in 3 years. What a great story that was. We want to thank Eddie for being on the show last week. And we've got another great show. As you know, on Baseball Outside the Box, we have listeners all over the world, and we are thrilled about today's show. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our listener. Before we do that, don't forget, go to @BaseballOutside. Join us on Twitter. Follow us. We'd love for you to do that. Our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Check out all the great resources and information we have for you on that website. Love our listeners. Email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com. Email me anything you like. And today's show, we are going to visit with Matt Lyle. Matt is by far not only a tremendous story, we bring you another great story of perseverance, but also currently, he's at the University of South Carolina. He is the hitting coach with the softball team. We're going to talk about that. A tremendous year that they're having. Some great stories behind that. Now, Matt's also taught major league players. He's got over 20, 30 guys at the major league level that he teaches, collegiate. But what's great about him, too, is that he understands all levels of the game of baseball, and not just hitting, but he is outstanding at teaching coaches, teaching parents. We have a very common theme here. As you know, in Baseball Outside the Box, we love to teach parents, coaches, and players as a three-prong unit, and we'll talk about that because I feel like, even though I've been in this 35 years, I feel like Matt and I have known each other for 35 years because we seem to have very similar stories. Check him out on CoachLyle.com, also at the Hitting Vault with all his incredible hitting stuff there. Really, really good stuff. I follow him on Twitter. Go to HittingVault.com. His Twitter @CoachLyle, and he is the most followed coach that I know of in Twitter and Facebook. You're not going to believe it. Over 129,000 people on Twitter and over 355,000 on Facebook. Incredible. Again, most followed coach. So let's get to it. Matt, welcome to the show, man.
Pete, thanks for having me on, buddy. Appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know, you know, been wanting to have you on, and you're very busy, but I'm so thrilled to have you. And, I mentioned a couple things about Matt. Obviously, we're going to go to our show notes. You can check out everything he's done in the game. I mean, he's been at Menlo College, a head coach. He's been at other colleges also in high school. But, Matt, what I want to do is we've had a great story last week of a person, a good friend of mine who came over from Dominican Republic with $100 and just persevered. And very similar story in some way because of the perseverance and the fearlessness that you and him have in common. I want to talk about that right away. I want our audience to know about it. We're talking about someone who was homeless at one time, all of a sudden shot up to stardom when it came to baseball. So let's get started right away. Tell us that story because it's unbelievable.
Well, I started coaching. I was a head varsity baseball coach at about 23 years old, my old high school, and I coached there for a couple of years. And you know, it was my dream from there on. I wanted to be a college coach, and I thought, hey, you know what? If I can work really hard and I do a good job, you know, maybe I'll get an opportunity to coach in college one day. And 2006, I got my first college coaching job. I was associate head coach at a small NAIA school called Patton University. I also finished my degree there that year. And then, you know, I was just trying my hardest to work at the ladder. I got my first head coaching job, college, is D3 job in Washington, D.C. at Gallaudet University. And, you know, what people don't understand is a lot of times these coaching jobs, these college jobs, you know, that first college job paid me $3,000. My second college job paid me $12,000. And, you know, when you're a young kid, you know, out of college, you don't have any family, you know, you can kind of pull that off. But for me, you know, I have five kids and a stay-at-home wife. And so, you know, it's much more difficult when you have a family to try to do those things. So I was working a graveyard shift at one job from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. I would sleep for about 2 hours. I would go to practice the rest of the day, and then I would take classes at night. So I honestly can't even remember when I slept for about a year. And then, you know, trying to work your way up the ladder. So in 2012, I was to be the volunteer coach at the University of Oregon, and it was a great job, great thing. But, as, you know, as a volunteer coach in college, I really thought we could make it as a family, and I would do some lessons and camps, and, you know, we couldn't make it. So, you know, ended up being homeless two times, actually, in my life, 2010 and again in 2012. And, you know, we had some friends who paid for groceries and helped us pay our cell phone bill. And I mean, we were really pretty much rock bottom. And, you know, what kind of changed the game for me was social media. You know, I went to social media 2012 and 13 when it was a time when nobody was really out there sharing a lot of stuff about hitting and coaching. And I just started sharing all my secrets on there. You know, I was still working a couple jobs and trying to make ends meet and trying to get into coaching. And just out of nowhere, the social media following just kind of took off. And before you knew it, I had 100,000 followers. I launched the Hitting Vault. I call it 1.0, the first version of it. And, you know, it really opened a lot of doors for me. And next thing you know, a lot of pro baseball players were following me and asking to work with me. I got some more college coaching jobs, and long story short, you know, it's got me to where I am now. Coaching in the SEC at the University of South Carolina. Like you said, I probably work with about 20 to 30 major league guys still. And so, you know, 5 years ago, I was selling payroll full time, coaching full time, living at my in-laws' house, driving a free car a friend gave me. And, you know, fast forward to 5 years, and I have about 700,000 followers on social media now, and I've got a great job coaching. So, I mean, it's been a very blessed journey, to say the least, but a very difficult one too.
Well, you're modest in a lot of ways, because I know you've slept in your car, you know, and that's what I love about the story, is that you persevered and you took a lot of chances. You took also a chance. I mean, here's another thing you did that I want you to talk to the audience about. I mean, you told the University of South Carolina, you know, coach, that you know, you're going to lead the conference in five categories in hitting. If you don't pay me, or you know, take away my check. And you ended up doing 4 out of 5. I mean, talk about that, because you know, nowadays everybody wants something quick. They don't want to take risks. They don't want chances. Talk about what you had to do to get to that level.
Well, it's funny, when the job first opened, I really wanted it, and you know, so I sent a text message to the coach and just said, you know, if I don't get the offense into the top five of every category in the SEC, and the year before, I think we were 11 or 12 in basically every offensive category. So I said, I will work for free if I don't get us in the top five in every offensive category. And I'll tell you what, about a month into the season, she brought it up and gave me a hard time about it. And we ended up actually, I think, in the top five or leading in almost every single offensive category. And so, you know, to be able to have a turnaround like that so fast, I mean, there's a lot of luck involved in that too. And a lot of buy-in from the players, but it was definitely a funny moment to say, well, at least I get to keep my paycheck now.
Yeah, that's right. Now you're talking to a lot of young coaches out there also, whether it be in the US, around the world. Your technology nowadays, as you mentioned, you know, you're all over social media. You're the most followed coach out there when it comes to baseball and softball. Talk about to our coaches, what got you through all this? What do you recommend to them? Because, you know, a lot of young guys, like I said earlier, sometimes, you know, I get them when I get emails from coaches. They want things fast. They want the salary. They want this. They want that. You know, talk about what you think, you know, young guys and gals need to do to be able to, you know, impress people when it comes to getting a job or getting a position.
It's two different things. One is that whenever people email me, and a lot of people do email me, hey, how do I get into coaching? I want to be a college coach. My best advice is that you've got to volunteer, and you've got to know that you've got to be willing to move somewhere or go somewhere and be a volunteer and say, hey, coach, I'll do whatever it takes to help your program. I'll throw batting practice, you know, whatever it's going to take to get in the door. And so a lot of people, you know, they think that they can get a paid job right away, and it's really difficult. So you've got to be able to say, hey, I'm willing to be a volunteer. I'm willing to start at any level and, you know, be willing to work your butt off to the point where you kind of start moving up the ladder slowly. And so that's the biggest thing. The second thing I think is that, you know, you and I have been in this game a long time, and there's two different types of coaches. There's coaches who learn the game. They know it really well. And they spend their whole career kind of, you know, defending their philosophy, and they're kind of set in their old ways. And there's another set of coaches who have a really what I call a growth mindset, who are willing to learn all the time. They want to get better. So for me, especially in my early 20s, man, I bought every single coaching book and every DVD that you could imagine. If you saw my garage right now, I can have a library for coaches of DVDs and books. You know, and I could tell you from Augie Garrido to Ron Polk to Andy Lopez. I mean, you name it. If there was a baseball coaching Bible or a DVD that somebody made, I bought it. I watched it. I read it over and over again. I just had this, you know, thirst for knowledge. And so that's the other half of it. You've got to be willing to say, okay, I think I know this game pretty well, but I got a lot to learn. And so I've been in this game since I was 5 years old, almost, you know, almost 40 years, and I've still got a long way to go. So it's kind of that twofold. You've got to really be able to humble yourself and say, hey, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I'll volunteer. I'll do whatever. And you also got to be willing to, you know, put aside your own knowledge and say, hey, I got still a long way to go. You know, teach me. I want to learn.
That's awesome. And I'll tell you what, with today's technology, there's a lot out there to go through that you know, you can be a life learner because there's so much information everywhere. Now, interesting thing, what do you do on a daily basis to make yourself better? And I know you got all these books and videos and all that, but is there a routine that you have that, you know, either on a daily or weekly basis that makes you better?
Well, for me, it's really about routine. I mean, I know some people who, you know, routine's not a big deal, but I thrive off routine. I need that routine. So, you know, I try to get up early with my kids every morning and kind of get to that same schedule every day. You know, everyone in our office gets to the office between 9:30 and 10 every morning. I get there at 8:30. I'm the only one in the office in the whole kind of department. And I like to get to work right away. And for me, it's about, you know, I spend some time on social media too and trying to see, you know, learn from the great people out there that are sharing good knowledge. And so I try to spend a part of my day learning, reading, you know, video. And I'll tell you, nowadays you can go on social media and you can learn from so many great coaches. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, there were probably one or two websites that had coaching information or, you know, out there. So there's just so much out there. So from a routine standpoint, we preach it to our players all the time. You know, let's get a little bit better every day. And I think coaches sometimes forget to do that. And so, you know, my goal at the end of every day is to try to get a little bit better. And, you know, what does that look like? For me, it's reading. For me, it's watching, maybe sometimes it's watching videos or, you know, trying to learn as much as I can from other coaches as well.
You know, and you mentioned players, you know, the times are changing. I mean, we've got internet, we've got texting, we got WhatsApp, we've got everything. And I know you do something special with your players, especially your hitters. Along with texting, but talk about today's technology, how you can use that to benefit yourself as a coach with your players.
Well, to me, good coaching boils down to relationship. And so in my opinion, and I learned it from Augie Garrido, is that, you know, the more intimate the relationship you have with the players, the easier it is for them to buy in, to trust you. I mean, in a lot of things. And so in 2018, the way that you reach kids a lot of times is through text messages and coming to their level, like you said, WhatsApp. And so when I was at Menlo College, we had a WhatsApp thread with all the players. And today I try to make sure I touch each player through a text message at least once a week, whether it's just checking on them, you know, words of encouragement, you know, game plan stuff, just always trying to be in contact in the way that they are. I mean, even at South Carolina, there's a team Snapchat thread, you know, and 5-10 years ago, we would never even think that was a possibility, that was a thing. So, you know, coaches nowadays, they've got to be able to, you know, reach the kids at their level where they're at, where they're having conversations. And a lot of it's through text. And, you know, the kids, we have some kids at South Carolina here that they sometimes make memes of the coaches. They make some really funny memes of me. And you just kind of, as coaches, you just kind of have to embrace that a little bit and laugh with them and just know that that's part of it. And, you know, and so it's just a different game nowadays than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. And I noticed because a lot of coaches I talked to, you know, they made the mistake of, you know, they'd be emailing their kids and kids are like, we don't use email anymore. You know, we text now. What about this? Because I read somewhere where you were texting, you know, your hitters, and later on we'll get a little bit into hitting also, but I want to get into the coaching aspect more. You know, you're texting your hitters some of the profiles of the pitchers they're going to face or maybe a game plan.
Yeah, so what I decided to do this year, which I'd never done before, is, and honestly it took me hours upon hours, is that, you know, every team has a scouting report on the pitcher and a hitting in a plan. And most of the time it's just a team plan. This is what the pitcher throws. This is what we're going to attack. But this year I decided that I would create an individual plan for every single hitter. So it took me many, many hours, more than I probably like to admit. But what I would do is I would create a hitting plan for every hitter based on their strengths and the pitcher's, you know, repertoire. And then I would build that out and I would text every player that plan about 24 hours before the first game of the series or before a game. And then we would sit down and talk about it, or we'd text back and forth about adjustments that they wanted to make or that I seemed to make. And so, you know, by doing that, it really allowed us to have a good plan.
Yeah, and it shows that you really care about your players. Now, what I love about you, Matt, is, and we've got a lot of things in common, but I know myself, I've made a lot of mistakes and continue to make mistakes and hope to get better constantly. But we both believe at the grassroots level, we both believe that, you know, on the show we talk about all the time, the grassroots of the game is the foundation of the sport. The people, we have more coaches coaching as volunteers, as parents, than we do any other coaching society out there around the world, whether it's the U.S. or the world. And it's so important how parents coach. And I know you've gotten heavily involved in this on parents, not only coaching the game, but also parenting their kids at home. So I want to get into that. I want to talk about, you know, what you believe, first of all, parents that have kids in the game of baseball, some of the things that they need to stay away from and maybe follow a little bit more, maybe change their philosophies.
Well, for me, the biggest thing that I've noticed over the last few years is that parents who are, you know, heavily invested in their kids and they want them to be successful, whether or not they believe that they're doing it, for a lot of kids, they are starting to feel like the parents' love is dictated on their performance. And so we're having a lot of issues in youth sports where a kid sees that the parents are happy when they do well and the parents are unhappy with them when they don't do well. And it's really creating this, you know, culture of fear, of, you know, knowing that a lot of fear to failure. And so, it's a really tough game right now for kids because you have a lot of parents putting a ton of pressure on them. Sometimes it's not, like I said, I don't think the parents are doing it intentionally a lot of times. Mm-hmm. It's something that we're getting a lot of feedback from players, and, you know, kids are having a really hard time growing into the game that they love because the parents are making it hard for them. And like I said, a lot of parents don't mean to do it. They love their kids. They want them to do well, but they're having a really hard time. And so I'm doing the best that I can with a lot of the messaging that I'm putting out there. It's just trying to educate parents in the sense of trying to give them some empathy with their own kids and finding out, like, you know, how do you get the best out of your kids? How do you, you know, you want them to succeed, you want them to have fun. How can we have both of those things? And trying to give them a different perspective than maybe they're getting right now. And so, you know, it's a pretty important thing to me. I have five children and I love watching them play and I want them to play for a long time. You know, I'm the oldest of seven kids. I have two sisters who played college soccer. I've got some, you know, brothers that play college baseball. And so, and my dad coached me growing up from 5 years old till high school. So, you know, coaching and parenting is something that I've been around my whole life. And I'm really passionate about both of those things.
Well, talk to the parents now. I'm a parent now that, you know, has a kid and, you know, he's 10 years old. He's in baseball. Coaches tell him certain things, you know, maybe I think it's different. You know, how does a parent deal with that? And how can they be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem?
A lot of times it's just about communication. You know, I get a lot of emails from parents saying, you know, I go to a hitting coach or a pitching coach or whoever coach, and I really like what he's teaching. My son really likes it, but their travel ball coach, their high school coach or whatever, whoever the coach is, you know, telling them to do something different and it's hard and they're having this issue. And so, a lot of times I just tell the parents, you know, have you talked to the coach at all? Have you called them up or face to face? Email is not the way to do it. I'll tell you that right now. Email is probably the worst communication medium for trying to talk to a coach or a parent. And so, you know, coming up to them after practice or at an appropriate time or a phone call and just saying and explaining to them, hey, you know, this is something we're struggling with. You know, how can we get on the same page? Is this something you can help? And I really do believe for the most part that the coach and the parents want to be on the same page. They want to do the right thing, but a lot of times they don't know how to approach it the proper way. And so, you know, at some point in the journey, the parents are going to have to release the kids to the coach. And they're going to have to find coaches that they trust, and they're going to say, hey, I trust you with my kid. I trust what you're doing. And if you don't feel that way, if you're a parent and says, you know what, I'm doing all these things, I'm teaching them to do this, and the coach is telling them to do all these different things, then that's not the coach for you. And you're going to have to find the coach. And if you can't find that, you're going to have to find a way to communicate and get on the same page with the coach. But, you know, for parents who are struggling with that, you know, the first step is communication and finding out, how can I talk to the coach about it? How can I get on the same page? And usually that fixes a lot of things, but a lot of times parents don't even go there. They complain to the other parents, or they leave the program without actually going to talk to the coaches.
Yeah, Matt mentioned it. Check him out. He's on Twitter at Coach Lisle, L-I-S-L-E. Check him out. He's got a lot of great things on parenting, on coaching, also on hitting. Obviously, he owns the Hitting Vault, hittingvault.com. Check that out. Some great baseball things there as far as hitting's concerned. Matt, you know, a lot of times on the show we talk about, you know, at a certain time, yes, I agree. You know, you need to let go of your kids to a good coach. Prior to that, you know, can a parent, you know, a lot of times a young kid comes home, a son or a daughter comes home, and, you know, they haven't practiced enough. But maybe the parent knows a little bit because they've been watching the coach or they've been talking to the coach, and maybe they can play catch at home with them a little bit, to roll them ground balls or do certain things to make, you know, to help them get better. Plus, it's a nice way to bond with your kids.
Totally. Yeah, and that's a great idea. And one of the things that I've really come across with a lot of parents is that, you know, how do I get my kid to practice more? How do I get them to do more? And then, you know, I would just say at the different ages, at some point, you know, they may actually be into something else. You know, my six-year-old son, he's into swimming, he's into soccer. And I'm kind of curious to see as he gets older what he'll be into. But, you know, as a parent, you know, I'd love for him to practice more. And you can definitely find ways as a parent to do some bonding out there. You know, in my opinion, playing wiffle ball in the backyard or at the park is one of the best ways. It doesn't have to always be, you know, your glove and the real ball. And it doesn't have to be this official thing. It can be, hey, let's get the wiffle balls out. Let's get a wiffle ball bat and have a fun game of home run derby in the backyard.
Yeah, you know, great point you brought up about your son. He's young. He's playing different sports. And I also heard you talk about that. This was a while back, but he bought a tennis racket. Now he's trying tennis. You know, what's great is, you know, research has been done. It shows, you know, that, you know, we need to encourage young kids to be multiple sport athletes. I mean, it's like 95% of the major league players were multiple sport athletes. And we're taking sometimes the athleticism out of their abilities. Now, when you were a young coach coming up, you know, so maybe some advice for our coaches now that are also parents that are coaching in the game. You know, some advice on at games, you know, how to act, what, you know, what do they do? Because, you know, a lot of times young kids, they're, you know, they're going to make a lot of mistakes out there on the field. I mean, can you overcoach, undercoach? Where's that fine line?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I would say that, you know, I coached my 14-year-old son. I actually coached his 8-9-year-old Little League team. And, you know, we tried to do as much as we could in practice. But when it came to the games, part of it is you just got to let them go and let them have fun and play. And, you know, there's definitely this line between overcoaching them and letting them play. It's a tough line for sure for some parents. And I would just say, you know, as much as you can, try to practice, you know, do the things you can practice in as much as you can at practice. But at game time, I always tell the coaches, you know, game time is for the kids, practice is for the parents and coaches. And so, you know, make sure that you get your good practices in so that when you get to the game, you know, you can let them play without overcoaching them and making them enjoy it.
Great point. Love it. Listen, and I know you mentioned earlier about failure, but you have a phrase. It's called permission to fail. Why don't you explain that to all our coaches and parents, what that means and how you, you know, how you do it, how you actually implement it, because I know it's not easy.
Yeah, it's tough. So I talk a lot about permission to fail, meaning that, you know, when you take the fear of failure out of playing a sport or a game, when adversity hits and kids, you know, make an error, they make a mistake, if they don't have the fear of failing, the recovery time to success is a lot faster. But when you have kids who know that if I make an error, my parents are going to yell at me or the coach is going to yell at me, and they know that they don't have this permission to fail, it makes it much, the road to success is much slower and much harder than it is if you have permission to fail. So, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, what do we do when a kid makes a mistake? They drop a fly ball, they you know, they strike out looking, you know, with the bases loaded and parents want to fly off the handle or the coaches want to fly off the handle. You know, if we can reposition that into saying, hey, no problem, buddy, you know, get the next one. And, you know, I always tell people a great example is that, you know, a pop up at second base in the infield and the kid drops it. And all of a sudden you hear the coach yell or a parent yell, come on, you got to catch that.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm thinking, you know, what do you think that kid was trying to do? And as soon as you yell to him, you basically just, he already feels bad. There's no chance that he feels good about it. He's not smiling that he dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you yell something obvious, like you should have caught that, all he's hearing is that, you know what, you know, I should have had that. Now everyone's mad at me. And, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. But if a coach says, hey, no problem, Billy, we got you, you know, get the next one. You know, in that moment, that kid now has got a much different confidence, a much different feel. And you know what? In the next practice, maybe we're doing pop-ups at second base a lot, you know? And I think that, but in the moment, coaches and parents, you know, it's really difficult. So I think we come across a lot of kids who, you know, are just afraid to fail. And I'll tell you, you know, at University of South Carolina in the SEC, you know, I've talked a lot with our players about, you know, taking the fear of striking out. And I asked my kids throughout the year, and even my own players, they have a fear of striking out. Every kid does. Mm-hmm. And there was a point really late in the year that one of our best players said something like, you know, well, I swung at that pitch because I was afraid of striking out. And I said, you know, have I ever yelled at you for striking out? Have I ever even gotten upset about you striking out? And she said, no. And I said, we had a talk as a team about how, you know, and I'll tell you, we led the SEC in strikeouts. We had the most strikeouts in the SEC this year as a hitting team. And our team knows that there was never a moment that I ever was upset at them about striking out. And because of that, by taking that fear out of it, I think that allowed us to lead the SEC in home runs and slugging percentage and OPS and hit by pitches and a lot of the great offensive categories, because they knew that with two strikes, I can still have my swing. I don't have this fear of striking out.
You know, that's very interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because you notice there's a high strikeout ratio in the major leagues now, but you're seeing a lot of productivity also. Now, you mentioned it, you know, you guys are led in four or five categories in hitting. Now, we just heard what one of the possible reasons is, and that's you know, taking away the fear of the strikeout, which I remember as a player having myself. What other areas? You guys did this fast, you know, at a very quick pace that you led all the conference in all these categories. What else do you attribute to when it comes to the hitting part, why you were able to do this?
Well, from the very first day, we talked about doing damage at the plate and knowing that exit speed, meaning how hard you hit the ball, is extremely important to getting on base and to hitting home runs and doing a lot of things. And so from day one, we started measuring exit speed. We measured it with radar guns. We measured it with our hit tracks. We put leaderboards up on the board. I created what's called the 80-mile-an-hour club. And if you hit a ball 80 miles an hour in the cages, you got your name up on the board. So from the very beginning, I created this culture of doing damage, a very competitive culture of doing damage, where everyone was trying to compete with each other, with themselves. And so from the very beginning, that was kind of the theme of the year, was do damage and swinging hard. And then from there, we also obviously created much other things like plate discipline and, you know, a lot of other things. But it really started, the foundation was doing damage.
Well, but, you know, that's interesting. When you talk about exit speed, so now that does that mean they increase bat speed? And does that also mean that, you know, how were you able to increase that exit speed? By just swinging hard, or did you do other things that would accomplish that?
So we did a lot of things. I mean, first and foremost, we worked on swing movements, you know what I mean? So everybody has swing issues. The major league players I work with, down to young players, you know, everyone has something to work on. So we did work on their swings, having better swings. And that was a big part of it. We did a lot of bat speed training, overload and underload. So we swung with heavier bats, with lighter bats. We hit baseballs. We hit heavy balls. I mean, we spent a lot of time on bat speed training, increasing bat speed. And then I really focused them on just swinging hard. So a lot of times, even at the college level, we have athletes who, when you watch them swing, you know they're not taking their 100% swing, that they are – they're focused on making contact, which is a great focus. Don't get me wrong, but like a lot of their players weren't getting the most out of their swing, just their swings on their own. So, like I said, I kind of unlocked them in the sense of saying, "Hey, show me your best swing. Show me how hard you can swing." And then, you know, obviously having it under control, and then trying to increase the bat speed, and you know, just so for us, it was kind of a. It was an array of a lot of different things, but, you know, giving them some freedom to swing hard, teaching them how to do it, teaching them how to have good swings, kind of all of the above.
Yeah, I like that, because players don't really know their maximum ability, and you brought them to that max and then worked from there. Now, you see it's very similar a lot of ways to a lot of pitching that's going on with, you know, increasing movements of pitching, then increasing arm speed, you know, and so it sounds very comparable. Now, the big question is going to be, which I want to bring up, because I'm sure there's a lot of people in the audience are thinking this, they're listening. All right, now we got college athletes here, pretty good athletes. You take the same type of system that you use in the hitting vault in your own system and bring it down to the young kids at 8 and 7 and 9?
Absolutely. You know, for us, it's like I said, you know, it doesn't have to be everything about launch angle, and it doesn't have to be about getting the ball in the air. It doesn't have to be revolved around that, but I want my 6-year-old who's playing T-ball to swing his hardest and under control, obviously, but I want him to swing hard. I want him to think about doing damage. And it's not just about swinging hard. You obviously have to have the right swing, the right movements to be able to do that. And so, you know, we teach the same movements to a 8-year-old that we teach to an 18-year-old. And, you know, for us, it's really about using our body the most efficiently and most effectively, and how do we do that? And so, you know, I would say that I've seen 6-year-olds who have really worked hard on swing movements have a ton of success too. So it's really not age, you know, you don't have to be a certain level of ability or age to do it at all.
Yeah, I love to hear that. And also, you mentioned, you know, challenging hitters, you know, because practice and drills sometimes can be boring, but you mentioned the challenge of hitters. Talk about a little bit about some of the things you do to challenge your hitters young coaches can use also with young kids.
Well, we try to make everything competitive and we try to measure everything. So, you know, if you're a young coach of a young team and you feel like, hey, we're doing some drills, but no one's really having a lot of fun, you know, find a way to measure it and try to find a way to make it competitive. And so, you know, if we did, we just played in Super Regionals last weekend against ASU, and we had a morning off. So we went to the batting cages and had a competition where we put a ball on a bucket, put a ball on a tee on a bucket at the back of the cage, and we tried to knock it off. Anyway, so 50 feet away, hitting balls up the tee, our hitters were trying to hit a baseball off of a tee, off of a bucket, you know, at the back of the cage, if you can picture that, and, you know, just having fun competition and trying to knock that ball off. And so, you know, we were working on good swings, we were working on a good contact and doing damage, but we'd also, you know, try to make it fun. So I think every coach can come up with a way to make a drill competitive, or if you, you know, the pocket radar is something we use. I actually have one in my hand right now. It's about $200 pocket radar gun, and you can use that pocket radar anytime in the cages, on the field, measuring bats, measuring exit speed and doing different exit speed competitions. And so, like I said, anything you can measure, whether it's distance, putting some cones out in the field and having a home run derby of how far you can hit it, you know, you can always find ways to make drills competitive and fun.
Yeah, and it's great. That carries right into games. That's what I love about it, because now they know how to deal with the pressure too, because there's going to be pressure when it comes to that competition. You know, Matt, you talk swing movements. I want to just briefly get into that. What are some of the common mistakes that we make, whether it be softball, baseball? I mean, you know, a lot of people ask, is it the same swing, different swing? But what are some of the common mistakes that we make as coaches when it comes to swing movements?
I would say the biggest thing that we see is that a coach tries to fix one problem and mm-hmm. they create another one. And so, you know, so let's say, for example, you've got a kid who doesn't rotate their hips very well. They just don't move their bodies well. And so a coach will say something like, you know, squish the bug, and they focus their back foot on turning, or, and so they kind of create a different problem. Or you have a coach who says, you know what, my kid's front shoulder is pulling off of everything. And so they have them do something else, and it's kind of creating some other problems. So a lot of times I think that a lot of coaches and parents misdiagnose, you know, what's actually going wrong with the kid swings and create other problems. And I think we kind of overcoach our younger kids. You know, if you are a T-ball coach, a 5-6-year-old coach, you know, I would tell you that the things that you should work on with your kids is getting them in a good stance, you know, make sure their feet are pointed the right way. I want them to step, and I want them to swing hard. That's it. Step and swing hard. And I think that a lot of times, you know, elbow up and do this and do that, and thinking way too much. Like, just step and swing hard. And I think that most kids who are athletic and trying to be athletic will kind of learn how to do the right things. And as they get older, we start adding tools to the toolbox. But I would just say the biggest thing is that I think parents look at their kid, they see an issue, and sometimes I feel like they create another issue by doing that, by fixing whatever the issue was.
And Matt, we realize, you know, we can't cover everything. And folks, you got to go to the Hitting Vault, hittingvault.com. Check it out. Join. Great membership. You're going to get a lot out of it. So please do that. It'll make you a much better, not just hitting coach or coach that's worked with hitters, but just a better coach in general. Matt, you know, pitchers, I mean, you just mentioned it, you know, the step. Pitchers, you know, they have a chance to, you know, wind up, they get ready. You know, is that step like getting ready, or is there something else that happens where the hitter can get ready also?
You mean for a game?
No, what I mean is like in when you're in your stance, right? You said go ahead and take a step and then swing. Well, pitcher, they get a chance to wind up, gather energy. You know, what does the body do for the hitter? Does it step and then hit, or does it do anything else prior to that?
Yeah, so it's really different for every kid at every level. And so for us, what we try to do is that we really try to work on tempo and just having this nice slow to fast tempo. And what I mean by that is that, you know, as the pitcher's starting their windup, you know, we're starting our kind of our load and kind of getting our body going a little bit. And so, you know, for us, a lot of times when we're working with younger hitters or older hitters for that matter, is that we're trying to just get a little rhythm going. And a big problem we come across with young kids is that when they start their load and they start their stride, they're really fast. They load fast, they step fast, and their foot is down, and the ball hasn't even left the pitcher's hand yet, or, you know, their body's all out of control. And so we spend a lot of time talking about slow to fast. And from a tempo standpoint, we talk about slow load, slow stride and fast swing. And with really young kids, when I used to coach my son's 8-year-old team, I would say things like, the kids would say, boom. And it, as funny as that sounds, they would practice that in batting practices. They would say, during their load and stride, they'd say really slow, and when their foot got down, they'd say boom, and they'd swing hard. And just that little fun game of saying kaboom in a good tempo really helped them in regards to timing and tempo. And so that's one of the ways that we deal with it.
Yeah, and, the other thing I wanted to ask, which I think is, we talk about the swing. I had a great swing. Ernie Banks told me one time in a batting cage that we one of the best swings you've ever seen. Great, but I couldn't hit. So the swing was part of it. Now, the part I think I had a hard time with, and I want you to address this, is the ability to pick the ball up and understand where it's coming from and also the velocity and maybe the timing aspect. What is there something you teach your hitters to, or maybe every hitter is a little different? What do you work on?
So I'll tell you what, in my own coaching journey, it's probably the thing that I'm focusing the most on right now is how do we increase plate discipline? How do we increase pitch recognition? Mm-hmm. And so I would say that there's a few different ways that we do it now at the college level because we've got a pretty good budget. So the V-Flex is a system. If you look it up, the V-Flex is something that we use. There's technology out there called U-Hit and a couple of the different ways that there's some virtual reality pitch recognition stuff that you can do. But at a younger level, if I don't have a budget, one of the best things that you can do is that when you have your pitchers throw bullpens or if you have your kids throwing in the bullpen at all, have your kids with a helmet in the batter's box just tracking pitches, just literally watching the pitch, saying, hey, that's a ball, that's a strike, or that's a curveball or a changeup. And the more pitches that brain sees, the better. And so I always ask, I'll give you an example of a 13 or 14-year-old kid. They play travel ball or high school ball, and they have that fall season and the spring season. And I tell them, in the fall season, if player A goes into every bullpen that the pitchers throw and stands there in the batter's box and just tracks pitches over and over again, and the other hitter doesn't do anything, and at the end of the fall, that player A has seen 5,000 pitches in the bullpen from their pitchers, and the other player has seen zero. When the season starts in the spring, who has a better chance of recognizing good pitches and having that recognition, that timing, seeing what pitches are? The kid who's seen that 5,000 pitches. And so at the very basic level, just the more pitches that we can see, if you can get kids to see more pitches in the bullpen, that to me, that's one of the easiest ways to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, what'll happen is, like you said, now some kids will, they at the young levels, they'll see an average fastball be able to hit it. The fastball gets harder, they can't hit that. Or now some, there's a slower pitch, they can't hit that. Is there something you do in your training to be able to adjust the pitches?
Yeah, and so at the older level, we work a lot on learning how to step and how to stay in our legs and learn how to turn. Not turning until we recognize the pitch. And so, I would say at a very basic level, what we do with a lot of our, college and pro players is that we try to get them to that good launch position where they haven't swung yet. They've learned how to stay in their legs and they don't actually turn their shoulders or swing the bat. They don't actually start their swing until after they recognize that pitch. And so we spend a lot of time just practicing that. There's all kinds of drills that we do for that, but learning how to stay in their legs before they turn, because as soon as their shoulders start to turn or as soon as their hands start to go, it's gone.
We're talking to Matt Lyle. He's at Twitter at Coach Lyle. Check him out. Also, the most followed coach on Twitter and Facebook, not only on coaching, also on hitting. You want to learn a lot of these hitting drills because they're really hard to translate on a podcast. Go to hittingbulk.com, join. You'll see a lot of those drills there to help in some of the things that we're talking about here. Matt, as a hitter, I remember, I feel like I'm getting my own private hitting lesson here. But, a lot of mistakes I made, I realize now, a lot of people made them and are still making them. One of the things that I never had was a plan. Even if you're a young kid at 12 years old, I would assume you got to know something. I've asked kids what's the count, and they didn't know what the count was. So give us an idea. What kind of plan can you have as a young kid, and what kind of plan are you can you have as a as an older player going in, you know, with the hit?
You were breaking up for just a second. Can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. What I was asking was about a plan that, you know, most hitters should have going up to the plate. Is there some type of plan they should have, or should they just go up there, look, and hit?
Well, we talk a lot about having a yes, yes, no mentality, meaning that when they get into the box, they're thinking, yes, we're going to swing. Yes, we're going to swing. Our goal is to swing the bat when we get in there. And that yes, yes, yes. And so as the pitch is coming, the only decision that we have to make is that, no, I'm not going to swing. And so that can mean that, you know, it's a pitch out of the zone. It's a high pitch. It's a ball in the dirt. It could be a curveball or a changeup, you know, something they don't want to swing at. And so I would say the best that we can, I would say that, you know, our goal is to swing, and that our only plan is to say no. And so a lot of times we have hitters and kids that they get up to the box and they say, you know, no, I don't know if I'm going to swing. I might swing. I don't know. And they start thinking about it as the ball is coming, and it just makes it much more difficult by stepping to the plate and saying, yes, I'm going to swing. And the only thing that's going to stop me is something I don't. That's probably the biggest plan we have.
All right. Now, I got to bring it up because it's almost like the big elephant in the room. You see it all over television, launch angles. And I understand launch angles when it comes to, you got to get the bat on the same plane. Let's clarify all this, because we're talking about all kinds of different ages, and there can't be anybody better than you to clarify the launch angle, the importance, but also how to utilize it properly.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's really difficult. I would tell you that launch angle is the product of a good swing. And then I think that at the younger levels, I think that it's probably over talked about and overworked on. I would say at the college and pro level, we can talk about that data a lot more and how we work on it. But I would just tell you that if my best advice to anyone under 16 years old, for that matter, would be, you know, work on to have a good swing, working on having good line drives. And I tell my kids when it comes to launch angle that, you know, a 10 to 15 degree launch angle is a nice line drive over the shortstop's head. And everyone's capable of doing that, and focus on that. And I think that all the launch angle stuff above that and all the things that go along with launch angle are great. But, you know, let's focus on line drives at a younger age. And I think it'll all work out in the end. And so, you know, having young kids try to match launch angles of major league hitters is not a great idea. But I would say that, like, a good swing on plane and all the things that detail that, I think that's great. Let's hit line drives. And let's focus hard line drives. And I think the rest will take care of itself.
What a great, simple goal. Hit line drives. And guess what? If you don't hit a line drive, you probably still get a decent result or a better result. Love it. Now, we're getting close to the end of the show. But, you know, and at the end, I'm going to let you kind of open it up. Anything, you know, you want to talk about coaches that you feel is important that we haven't covered in the show, because it's only an hour show, you know, go ahead. But right now, one more thing I just wanted to ask you. You know, curious, just when you get your first hitter, and you haven't seen him yet, he or she, and they come to you, because I know you've had, you know, you give a lot of hitting lessons also. What's the first thing you do?
Just evaluate them. I watch them swing. Maybe they'll hit for 10, 15 minutes or just even a few minutes depending on, and just kind of evaluating their body, their type, how they move, how athletic they are, because a lot of times we get athletes who, coaches want to do something with them. They want to change something in them that maybe they're not athletic enough to do, or maybe their body doesn't work well with that movement. And so the first thing that I do is just kind of evaluate them. And then every hitter probably has, 5 to 15 things that we could say is wrong with their swing. But what is the one thing that we could work on right now to make them better? And I think that as coaches, we get a kid, we get a parent, we tell them, okay, they've got these 10 things going on, and we're going to do all these things. And that's not helpful. It's definitely not helpful to a kid. And so, you know, finding out what is the one movement or the one drill or the one thing that we can work on right now that will make this hitter better. Let's focus on that one thing, and then we'll move on to the next thing when the time comes. But I think that a huge mistake that coaches make is they think about the three or four things that the hitter needs to fix let's figure out the one thing that makes them better right now, and then we'll move on to the next one.
And Matt, you're saying that different hitters, you might have different drills for different things they're doing incorrectly?
Totally. I would never have cookie cutter drills that might not work for one kid. So for one kid might need to work on something completely different. And so, at South Carolina, each one of our hitters has their own hitting plan, their own drills they work on. We very rarely all do the same drill. I mean, I think there are drills that we do, but for the most part, everyone's working on their own thing.
And finally, before we open it up on for you to talk to the coaches on anything you like, the last thing, are we too quick or are we late when it comes to making changes in a hitter's swing or adjustments?
What do you mean by too early?
As a coach, do we evaluate the hitter and all of a sudden want to make changes right away, or do we wait too long sometimes? Or is there, where's the fine line?
I think we probably do both a lot. I would just say at the younger ages, we probably spend too much time doing, too much stuff. I would say that the bigger mistake is that we talk too much. We spend a lot of time explaining to the kids what we want them to do. For me this year, a goal at South Carolina and a goal in my coaching is to trick them, trick them with drills. And so, having them do drills that help them get better without having to tell them what they're working on. And so, a lot of kids, I said, even college athletes, if we can trick them by having them do a drill to get better without having to explain to them all the things, to me, that's a better method of than trying to explain to them, hey, do this, do that. We're too quick to do that.
Wow, that's fantastic. What a great voice to my ears, basically, because talk too much, not do enough. That's outstanding. And Matt, finally, let's launch it off, finish it off with anything you'd like to talk to our coaches and parents, players in general about, coaching. We have got coaches all over the world listening. So anything you just like to mention, let's finish it off with that.
The biggest thing that comes to my mind is just understanding that every kid has a story and to learn that story, like get to know your kids, love them. To me, love and trust are the two biggest things when it comes to coaching. And then relationships. Relationships is the biggest thing between a coach and a student athlete or a son or daughter. That's the most important thing. So, cherishing the relationships, building the relationships, strengthening the relationships with love and trust. And I would tell you that when you focus on those things, you get the best out of your athletes. And so I would just say those are the biggest things that I would really make sure that coaches communicate to their athletes and their children, how much they love them, how much they enjoy their company, how much they enjoy coaching with them. And I think that I don't think we do a good enough job of that as coaches and parents.
Outstanding. That is Matt Lyle, University of South Carolina, hitting coach, softball. They are in the SEC. Unbelievable what they've accomplished since Matt has joined the team as their hitting coach. He's also the owner of the Hitting Vault. Go to hittingvault.com. And he's on Twitter at Coach Lyle. Check him out. He's got the most followers when it comes to coaches and also as a hitting coach on Twitter and Facebook. By far, outnumbers everybody. So you've got to check out what he has on there. There's not the reason he has all these followers because he's got some great stuff, great advice. I follow him daily. So, Matt, man, this has been a pleasure. I know it's only an hour. We could do 5 hours. It's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Pete.
All right. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Special thanks to the Lineup Media Group and our producer, Brian Kroc. They do a great job of hosting the show, the best in the business. I believe they're the fastest growing podcast industry or business in the industry, and they are outstanding. Thank you to Matt Lyle for joining the show. Remember, keep getting smarter by listening to Baseball Outside the Box. We bring you some of the most innovative coaches that love to challenge the status quo. Check me out on Twitter. I've got some things. I follow Matt, and I've got some other information on Twitter at Baseball Out. We're on Facebook. Follow us, Baseball Outside the Box. Spread the word out on both our social medias. We'd appreciate it. And remember, I am Pete Caliendo. I'm your host of Baseball Outside the Box. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.